Welcome to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast,
your source for coyote hunting, fishing, and more.
We're calling West Texas, and we're filming, and we called 36 coyotes in one night.
3 years ago, I had in one morning 6 bucks that were 3.5 and older within 50 yards of my stand. 6 different bucks, one morning.
It was in October, went made my first coyote stand, me and my cousin. And very first freaking stand, guys, we caught up 7 coyotes. 7 coyotes.
Florida itself is a fisherman's paradise. We stick out in the middle of the water, man. There's water everywhere.
Let's kick it into overdrive.
This podcast brought to you by Predator Hunter Outdoors. Locally owned and operated out of Attica, Michigan, Predator Hunter Outdoors will keep you hunting when the sun goes down. Predator Hunter Outdoors has something for every budget and experience level, including lights, night vision, and thermal, as well as a full line of tripods, mounts, and predator calls. Look them up on Facebook and Instagram at Predator Hunter Outdoors, or visit their webpage at www.predatorhunteroutdoors.com. Enter the promo code LIGHT for 20% off light products, and TRIPOD for 10% off tripods and mounts. With today's technology, hunters in the field have more tools than ever to maximize their outdoor experiences. One of those tools is a Grand Rapids, Michigan-based HuntWise app. The HuntWise Pro app is loaded with features including property lines, landowner data, windcast, huntcast, over 250 map layers including 3D maps, a localized rut indicator, as well as discounts of 20% off various name brand products. Step up to the Elite membership and you will get all of that plus HuntCast 2.0 with customizable alerts, Whitetail 365, which gives you season dates and local rut times, as well as the best time to plant your food plots, a 15-day hunt forecast, and 40 to 50% discount on name brand products. Enter code OVERDRIVE for 20% off your membership to HuntWise. Hey everybody, welcome to this week's Overdrive Outdoors podcast. Tonight we have myself, we have my co-host Josh Mapes, and we have special guest Scott Hampton. How you doing tonight, Scott?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Doing well. How about you, Josh?
Pretty good. I'm doing all right. Man, I spent the entire day in the garage. I was supposed to be at work. Instead, I was under my truck replacing a brake line all day long.
Well, at least you have a garage to do it in. I don't. I'd be laying in my driveway.
I know, and that little bullet heater does some kind of work. I mean, it at least got the snow to melt all over me while I was trying to work on it.
You're really wet behind the ears, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, Scott, tell us about yourself. Where are you from?
I'm from Beggs, Oklahoma, about 30 miles south of Tulsa.
Okay. And is that still where you live now?
I live in Tulsa now.
Okay.
So I live on the east side of Tulsa, actually. But that Beggs is still home.
So I remember you from back in the Predator Master days. I know we always have lots of fun talking about Predator Master days, but I remember you from on there and specifically watching some of the videos that you put out of coyote hunting, especially with the dogs. And then obviously from there, you know, social media has progressed and seen you on all the platforms and, you know, kind of followed you for years. Like we told Scott or Steve Greiner, one of the things I'm trying to do is get with some of these older, I don't want to say older because I don't want to insult anybody, but some of the guys that were doing it before I was and that I watched and listened to and learned from when I first started getting involved in predator hunting, which was early 2000s. And you're one of the names that was around quite a bit then as well. So tell us a little bit about your hunting background. Did you grow up in a hunting family down there in Oklahoma?
Yeah, my dad was a deer hunter. We never had any place very good to hunt deer. I mean, it was one of those deals. If you saw a forked horn buck, if you planned on killing a buck, you might ought to go ahead and shoot him. So I never really had any deer to hunt. And so I wasn't able to learn about deer. And that's what I try to tell people about coyotes. If you don't have coyotes, you're not going to learn how to kill coyotes. So now that, you know, I'm in the woods more, because of coyotes. I've learned a little bit about deer. I see a lot of deer. When I was younger, I didn't know anything about wind. I didn't know anything, you know. I'd get in my deer stand and it didn't matter what direction the wind was blowing. You know, I can remember my deer stand overlooked this field and there was a creek and a tree line, and I don't remember if the wind was blowing right across the field or if the wind was blowing, you know, I don't all because it wasn't something that I had any knowledge about. So, and another thing, we never put out corn. And now that I see what corn does with deer, I'm like, wow, we were really taking two steps back, not putting out corn.
But back then, did Oklahoma have a low deer population, or was it really you just didn't have deer where you were?
Back in, I was born in 1970, and I started hunting deer probably 12 years old. I remember like in the early 80s that doe tags were a draw. You had to draw a doe tag, and only certain counties issued doe tags. So I think probably there were low numbers, and then when you add not having much skill or knowledge when it comes to locating and finding, and you know, I know guys that can look at an old school topo map and say we're going to put a stand here for a north wind, this is a south wind stand, and this, and just never even step foot on the property and walk right to and hang stands and kill big deer. I'm not that guy.
Were you archery and rifle for deer?
When I was late teens, probably 1920-ish, I bow hunted. I had a place. It's funny, I actually just got back from that place where I killed my first deer, my first little 6-point buck with the bow. I was just on that place today. And but I gun hunted primarily. Then I decided I wanted to try to kill a deer with a bow, and I did that. And then I had a buddy whose dad drove on his way home. He drove like a mile and a half to the north of where I was at. And he told me, he goes, hey, every day when I come home, he said, there are these three does, and this is where they're at. This is where they're walking. Well, I went up there, and sure enough, there was a trail. So I broke down, I mashed down a spot, made it all flat. And it was like Johnson grass or something. It was probably close to chest high. So I made a place where I could lay and get comfortable and wait. So every now and then I'd peek my head up, and I was watching my watch. And sure enough, like clockwork, here come these three does. And I'm down on the ground. I get my bow drawn back, and I raise up, whop, shoot this doe. And it was like success. But that was the first time that I'd really targeted a deer and gone after it and was successful in getting it killed. Before, it was just like, I think I'm in a good spot. Hopefully something walks by.
Nice.
So it kind of.
You guys are probably more of a free state down there. You don't have any weird restrictions on what you can use to hunt them, do you?
Mm-mm. I mean, I don't know that you could use a spear. I know that you can't use those air sabers, okay. But I see that changing. I don't know if anybody will push for it, but no, you can use crossbow, bow, shotgun, center fire, rifle. No restrictions that I'm aware of. I think it used to be you couldn't use anything 22 caliber, and they changed it so you can use a 22, 250, or a 223 now.
How long is your deer season down there?
Bow season starts October 1st. I think rifle season is 3 weeks. Right now is holiday doe. It started yesterday and it runs through the 31st, so you can get an additional doe tag. And then archery, I believe, goes through January 15th, and you can kill 2 bucks and 4 does. So you could kill an archery buck, or you could kill 2 archery bucks. I don't think you can kill 2 rifle bucks, but you can definitely hold 2 bucks. And I think muzzleloader would be separate, so you could use a modern firearm and kill a buck, and a muzzleloader and kill one of your bucks. I think that's accurate. But it lasts quite a while.
Yeah, it's longer than ours.
It's longer than ours.
Yeah. And then I've had.
Doesn't sound like they have rifles out as much as we do.
Right. Our season, bow season starts October 1st. Then we have what they call a liberty hunt, and then an early youth kids hunt, which they can use firearms on. And then there's a little bit of break. Then it rolls into our firearm season, which goes November 15th to November 30th. Then it goes into a, what was that next one called?
Puzzle loader season.
Puzzle loader season, which in most of the, or part of the state, you can
no
use
longer matters.
Yeah, you can use a regular gun during muzzle loader season. And now we're in late doe. That goes
private
to,
land only.
Yep, which goes to January 1st. And then the archery season is open again. That goes to January 1st.
Yeah, and there's some counties now, I think, that are open till almost February or something like that for doe management or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, but we up here, for example, I know you can shoot up to like what, 10 deer?
Well, you can buy 10 doe tags right off the bat. I've filled 6 doe tags, and you can buy 2 buck tags through the whole year. So, but you can use those 2 buck tags on does. So technically up to 12, I believe.
Yeah.
Most people think
that the insurance.
A lot.
You there?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say, most people think the insurance companies are automobile insurance companies and farmers insurance are in bed with the DNR, and that's why they're trying to kill so many deer.
Maybe. I've had a lifetime license since 1989, so I don't have to purchase a license every year. And then on deer tags, I don't have to go buy a deer tag. I just have to put my information on it, and now with electronic, you know, submit it electronically, and then Oklahoma has a special hunt. They call them special hunts where they're draw hunts for certain areas. And if I get drawn in, if I were to apply for one of those and get drawn in, I don't have to pay for that either. So it's been a blessing, even though I haven't hunted deer in 13 or 14 years until this year. It's just been nice to not have to worry about it. I kill 2 or 3 does every year. I've got a couple of friends that like the meat. So if there's a doe that messes up and shows up in front of me and it's season, she'll get whacked. But as far as actually going and pursuing deer, this is the first year I've done it in a long time.
Now, do you like to eat venison?
No.
He says no.
I hunt in the summer a lot, and I see deer with, it looks like they've got 2 fists hanging from their head. Their ears have got so many ticks on them. And don't get me wrong, I will, but I don't, you know, my dad likes it. He shot a buck this year and took it and had it processed. And then, but no, I don't have any deer meat in the freezer. I would, but I don't prefer it.
Well, one of the things about you that I follow too is the fact that you do a fair amount of rodeo stuff, right?
I did. Yeah. I roped calves for a long time. And growing up, and then I basically just quit. You know, it's insanely expensive. And I didn't rope for 10 years or so. And my buddy called me. He goes, "Hey, I entered you to rodeo this weekend." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "I entered you." And I'm like, "Where?" And he said, "El Reno." Well, El Reno's about 3 hours west of here. And I'm like, "Why? Why El Reno?" He just show up. So I show up. I hadn't roped a calf literally in a decade, and I won the rodeo.
Nice.
Just pretty good and everything. Everything just fell into place. But then I went to another one a week later and placed 4th. And then I didn't rope again for 6 or 7 years. So, it's just so expensive. And it's one of those deals. I'm not a multitasker. Like, I can't hunt coyotes and rope and do other things. And if I'm going to have a horse and I'm going to rope, that is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be as good as I can. I grew up around a guy that was what I consider him the best calf horse trainer that ever lived. And there's not a lot of people that will argue that, but, he taught me so much, so many little things. And, he was, you didn't, when he told you to shorten your reins, you shorten your reins, and you did this and you did that. There was no room for anything that was not absolutely perfect. And, I've always been able to take horses and, you know, tune them up a little bit for other people. and have good horses. And it's just one of those deals that I, if I've got a horse out there that I'm not riding 4 or 5 days a week, keeping legged up and exercised, I'm not doing that horse justice. And I can't do that. So I love it, but it's one of those things that it's just kind of, you know, not saying that I'll never rope again, but I'd probably just go somewhere and enter and ride someone's horse.
Well, the nice thing about that is you probably made a ton of contacts for good beef. That was kind of my point. I mean, you're down there in Oklahoma and you're involved with the rodeo stuff a bit. What do you need venison for? You got like good contacts for beef.
With the coyotes and the rodeos, and then when I fought the people that, man, I don't know that there's a state out there that I couldn't get on the phone and say, hey, I need a place to stay, or hey, I'm broke down. So it's, yeah, I've been very fortunate that I know people all over the place just from the things that I've done. Mm-hmm. And then, but yeah, as far as beef and people growing beef, definitely.
So how old were you when you decided to get into predator hunting?
41.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What got you interested in it?
I was watching a TV show, and it was called Calling All Dogs, or Coyote Hunting Has Gone to the Dogs. I ordered a VHS tape, and it was Cal Taylor, a guy, a government hunter in Wyoming named Cal Taylor, and Cal Taylor and Murphy Love. And I saw that, and they're calling coyotes, and their terrain's a little bit different, but these dogs are out their ways and coming back and working the coyotes. And it was intriguing to me, and I hated dogs. You couldn't have given me a dog. Man, that's interesting. I want to know about this. So I started doing some research, and there were a couple more videos out there, and it just something, a light went off, and I figured out that I liked it, and I started gathering up ground. And that was probably 4 or 5 years before everybody literally had a call and was coyote hunting. So I amassed a large amount of ground. A lot of it now, you know, there's relatives that hunt it and this and that, and I don't have near as much as I used to, but I don't hunt as much as I used to. I've got enough to keep me content, and that I can go, you know, I don't want to hunt daylight till dark anymore. I might go make 4 or 5 stands, kill a coyote, kill 5 coyotes, not see a coyote. Doesn't matter. I'm, you know, I enjoy it. I come home. So, but yeah, that video right there is what got it started.
So when you first started, you weren't using dogs, correct?
Correct. I had piddled around. I can't remember how I wound up with I had a Fox Pro Spitfire, $199 call. And I had been trying to hunt coyotes for a few months, and then I saw that video, and then that's kind of what got the dog deal started. But I talked to, you know, Kelly Jackson. He's helped me a tremendous amount. There was a government trapper in South Dakota named Randy Rohde, and Randy was killed in an automobile accident 3 or 4 years ago. Maybe 5, but never spoke to Randy on the phone, never met him in person. Everything we did was text message or messenger. And him and Kelly were similar. They wouldn't just give me anything. They would give me something to work with. And I would go and I'd basically report back, okay, this is what I did, this is what happened, all this. And, you know, and then they're both like, well, why do you think that happened? What caused that to happen, this and that. And then just getting to hunt with other guys. I've got to hunt with a bunch of people that know a lot about coyotes. And I just, I pay attention. There are some guys that I've hunted with that do things a little bit differently, and they have success. And I just tried to feed off of everything that had a positive result. I tried to apply it to what I did, and some of it worked, and sometimes it didn't work as good as other things did. And I just would kind of narrow it down. And the main thing was, I read a lot of books. Major Boddicker has got books out there. I read PhD level guys like Major Boddicker, and I'm at a loss, Ray. Anyway, these guys were going out and camping out in the desert in Arizona and doing surveys. They were killing coyotes, cutting them open, seeing what they had in them, seeing how far off they would respond to a howl. Rich Higgins is another guy that has just an insane amount of knowledge when it comes to coyotes. I talk to Rich a lot and listen to what he says and the things, and just everybody. I learn a lot from people that don't know what they're doing, because I see what they're doing and it's obvious they don't know what they're doing, so I don't do it. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm fortunate that I've had a lot of guys with knowledge that would help me. And you know, a lot of them, it was one of those things, if they said, okay, well, this is what's working for us, we're playing rabbit for 2 minutes, we're playing woodpecker for 7 minutes, and then we're playing pup distress 17, and we're done with our stand. Well, if I go out and that's what they're doing and I'm doing it and it works, they were very adamant about, you don't tell people what you're doing. I had a tight group. I had two or three different tight groups of people that would share information, and all of them were older than me, had been doing it forever, and they truly felt like there were secrets. And some of them, they flat out were. And they explained to me, like, if you're doing this, if this is working, and you go out there and you tell two guys and they tell two guys, and all of a sudden a dozen guys are doing it. And they said, it doesn't matter if it's 10 states away, eventually it winds up in your backyard, and what you're doing, those coyotes have heard it and they get wise to it. And, you know, people can say it's crappy or whatever, but I'm all about doing whatever I can do to succeed. And, you know, I've had a couple of guys that I share everything with now, and, you know, they share with me. And I don't think so much anymore there are any hidden secrets. Back then there were a few sounds that I guess only a handful of guys knew about. And I had some of them, and they were probably the seventh recording and they sounded terrible, but they worked. I started fiddling around. One of the things I did is I noticed after I got dogs, there would be things. There was one thing that really kind of a light went off for me. I had a neighbor that had puppies, and they let those puppies outside when they were about 3 or 4 weeks old, and the sounds they were making, my dogs just kind of perked up and looked and went and looked. But I noticed that one of the neighbor's dogs really keyed in on it. I thought, well, all right, that's different. So I went over there and I asked him, I said, hey, can I record those puppies when they're out running around in the yard? And they're like, sure. So I record these puppies, and you can hear me walking in the grass. You can hear cars driving by. And I tried it, and it actually had pretty good luck with it. I mean, I wouldn't say it would be a go-to 100% of the time, but I killed coyotes with it. So I just started paying attention to how my dogs responded to different sounds that I played, stuff like that, and just tried to figure out, you know, like right now, you know, it's mid, late December. What makes that coyote tick right now? And then, you know, what's he going to be doing 30 days from now, 60 days from now? And just learned that. And that was emphasized to me by the guys that helped me, that, you know, when you understand the animal you're trying to kill, you'll be more successful. And again, deer, I'm learning a little bit about deer, but, you know, I can pull up an Onyx map and look at terrain and go in and be confident that I can go somewhere and kill coyotes. I'm not going to say put a deer stand here, because I don't know. Right. I don't know. So, but
you said you were noticing how people's pet dogs, or, you know, their hunting dogs, whatever, were reacting to certain things. On a scale of 1 to 10, how similar would you put a coyote with an actual dog? I mean, like a 10 being they're exactly the same animal, how similar do you think they are?
Man, it in some ways they're very similar. In some ways they're totally not similar at all. I know that it was explained to me when that puppy sound that I had recorded, that is more of a prey sound instead of, because they, that wasn't a pup distress. It was just puppies just, you know, like a casual litter of puppies whining for their mama. There wasn't a screaming or a screeching or anything like that. And, you know, Kelly's actually the one who told me, he goes, well, that is a combination of prey distress and also canine distress mixed together. So it's not like I've never gone out and just hit pup distress first sound and waited on something to happen. Whenever I'd start off with those puppies, and there's all kinds of canine puppy sounds out there, and they all seem to work pretty good, but it would be more for a prey deal instead of the screaming pup or coyote or like that. So there are certain things. Now, one thing I noticed, that one of those secret sounds that I don't think, I haven't played it in a couple of years because it doesn't work anymore, but one of those, and this is something you guys help me here, see if you can have any input with this.
Lightning Jack.
That sound. Well, yeah, but I could play that sound and every dog I ever owned would hackle up and go to that call and just be like, just bouncing nuts. Didn't matter. I mean, every dog I ever owned did it. Now I can play that, and my domestic dogs that are decoy dogs that have been there, done that, nothing. It doesn't trigger anything with them. And I've noticed that
times.
No, they've never heard it. I'm talking about have never heard it. I've got some terriers out here that have never been on a coyote stand, and I could play that sound and it wouldn't do anything. Back a few years ago, I don't care if it was your mama's lap dog that was half blind and deaf, that dog would gristle up and want to go down there and see what was going on. Hmm. Not much anymore. So why does a domestic dog not have the same reaction to that sound that 5 years ago they all did?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah, that's odd.
I have no idea.
Believe me, I've asked a bunch of people. It makes no sense, but it's sure enough. I tell you what, I've got YouTube videos that I've got the sound silenced on, and I can take you to, okay, at the minute 29 mark, this is when the sound plays. You can watch the coyote's demeanor. You can watch the dog's demeanor. And now I could take it out there and play it and record it, and it wouldn't be nothing. And I don't know why, but they're different, but they're the same. So I know that's not really an answer to the question, but there are similarities, but then at times they're worlds apart.
Yeah. I've noticed the same thing kind of anytime I've put new sounds on my collar or anything and I'm messing with them, all of a sudden one will have the dogs running down the stairs. So it's like, you know, how similar are they? And I feel like, yeah, there's probably quite a bit of differences and similarities. So
I'll tell you this, if I've got something that triggers a domestic dog, I will use it, because in that sense, I feel like if it's going to trigger your pet, it's going to trigger something out there also.
Yep.
And that, I think they're very similar. They're very similar.
When did you start using decoy dogs?
Soon as I started. I mean, I hadn't been hunting very long at all, and I got started into it, and the first dog I had wasn't all that great, and I wasn't smart enough to realize that it wasn't. And there's a government trapper, not quite Western Oklahoma, but west of here, that I got a pup from, and he hauled her for 7 or 8 months. Trap lines, everything, did everything, made a couple of coyote stands with her. It wasn't quite the time of the year that it was time for the coyotes to work dogs. And when it rolled around to that time of year, I picked her up and started putting coyotes in front of her and started hunting her. And she just happened to, she worked, she did it. And then I bought a Catahoula off of a guy over by Arkansas whose family's in Louisiana. I bought a smaller end Catahoula female. She weighs about 45 pounds. My buddy Kyle has her now, but I put her with that yellow dog. I called that yellow dog girl dog, And the Catahoula was Katie. I put them together and they worked solid, worked real good. And then I had a guy that I hunted with for a few years that had some really nice dogs. And we just put our dogs together. And when you've got, you know, when you've got a dog that'll do it and you put a young dog with them, they pick up on it pretty quick. And there's some that just won't. There's some that will and there's some that won't. And I found about one out of every 12 will. And that's what's so difficult about it is you're bringing a dog up. I don't want to take a dog out until they're 8 months old, 9 months, because I figure if I get a dog rolled and it quits me and it's a 6 month old pup, that's on me. If I get a dog that's more mature and a little farther along, if they quit at 9 months, they were going to quit if it happened at 15 months. So I always would have to be bringing dogs up, bringing dogs along, and then having another guy that's got good dogs, it that helps tremendously.
One thing I remember too, was you had a tendency from my perspective to use some smaller dogs as decoy dogs. Like for example, Poot, which I know Poot was very important to you. And I remember, following the adventures with Poot and then unfortunately Poot's passing. What breed was she?
She was a Patterdale Terrier.
Okay.
The only reason that I got Poot was on Predator Masters, on the Houndsman Forum. There were a few guys, Idaho, Utah, I'm not sure where the one was from, but they were know-it-alls. And my buddy Jeff Ryder has one of the best dogs that's ever played the game. And they told me and Jeff, you don't know what you're doing. You're doing it wrong. This and that, this and that. And we were going out and we were getting videos that were just off the charts. And of course, these guys, they never did get videos. One of them produces a DVD on how to make a decoy dog that I don't even know why it would be titled that. But, they were always too busy to film anything to prove to us their dogs would do what they said they would do. And I'm 100% certain they wouldn't. But there was always talk about Patterdale Terriers. I didn't even know what they were. They were wild. They were insane. They were uncontrollable. They were all these things. There's no way in the world you could decoy with Patterdale Terrier. I'm like, show you that you can. And they're too small. Number one, Poot was only 10 pounds. The ones I've got now weigh about 13 to 16 pounds. Poot was just too small. She loved it, so I let her do it. But I messed with them every day. A lot of these guys that have these terriers, they're earth dogs. Mm-hmm. They'll put a beacon, basically like you would wear if you were skiing in an avalanche area, and there's a box. And that box tells you how deep that dog is. So it'll pinpoint, like, right here's where the dog is, and you can move it around and find the depth. So when you go to dig those dogs out, you don't miss. You can dig for 4 or 5 hours, and if you're this far off, not a scoop of that dirt's worth anything. So I got to looking, and a lot of these guys, they just keep those dogs on a chain spot and they don't mess with them too much if they're not hunting them. And yeah, they are crazy, uncontrollable and all that because they're wound so tight. But I took her, and she was 15 months old before she ever made a coyote stand. And first coyote stand she made is less than 5 miles from where I live right now, and called in a double. And she didn't know what she was doing, but she worked them like a champ. Her and Katie and Girl Dog, they worked them like a champ. And she just had a knack for it. And like that yellow dog that I called Girl Dog, she would run out in the middle of five coyotes, didn't care. But if there was a coyote in the tree line barking, she would not go to it.
Really?
Yep. But if it stepped out and had five with it, no problem. Didn't care. But Poot would win coyotes, go to coyotes off a scent, and go to something barking. And I've got two dogs now that will do the same. But until then, that was the only dog I had ever had that would do that. And I just loved her. She was like a little human. And, she got lost. She was in the desert for 11 days, got a phone call. And I mean, we were in the truck in 15 minutes headed to New Mexico. And she took a couple of coyotes up in a cornfield, they broke her pelvis. They wrecked her pretty good. And, you know, I basically retired her, and she would just go crazy. When I left the house, she knew if I was going hunting, then she just would go nuts. So I started taking her again. And, but that was just because those guys, they just hounded me and Jeff so hard. And we're making all these videos, getting all this footage, killing these coyotes, and they're just yap, 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 all mouth. And the one guy, he breeds dogs, and he's got good dogs. He breeds with purpose. He runs big game. He has some decoy dogs, and I don't remember if he's in Utah or Idaho or where he's at, but he breeds good dogs. But some of the stuff he was saying was just not true. And his main deal, all he wanted to do was pound on us, tell us we were dumb, we were wrong, and all that. So that's where the smaller dogs come from. I've got a Patterdale that I use now, but she weighs 28 pounds. So she's not exactly big, but she's not small. And, but that's what got that started. And a lot of people are like, does a smaller dog seem to work better? No, I've had two full grown adult coyotes come in and poop go to them and then turn and leave. And it's on the same instance, I've had them come in. And now I can tell you this, I've seen instances where I never took poop by herself. That was not going to happen. But I have had instances where I had her and two other dogs, coyote came in, started working, and targeted poop. So I do know that they will target that dog once it starts going. But as far as from what I've seen, if they're going to work, they're going to work a bigger dog just like they would a little dog. So, but as far as the smaller dog being beneficial, not really.
What would you say? I mean, I have never hunted with decoy dogs. Up here in Michigan, I've only ran into one guy, and Josh might know who he is, but I don't remember. But I ran into one guy at a tournament that was running a decoy dog in Michigan. So I've never been around that aspect, but watching the videos from, you know, various people, the action you get is so wild. I mean, up close, personal, lots of vocals, lots of activity. What would you say is the biggest thing you've learned about coyotes using a dog versus not using a dog?
It doesn't work year round. Like right now, there's times that I'll take dogs this time of year just to get them out of the house, let them stretch. If I'm trying to kill coyotes, I'm not taking a dog with me right now. When they're denning, when they've got pups, pretty much from about mid-May through mid-September is when it really works. Now, there are going to be coyotes. That's another thing. In the beginning, 8 out of 10 coyote stands I made in the spring and summer, the coyotes that work. Now, 2 or 3, maybe 4, that percentage has dropped considerably. But they are not an advantage this time of year. Can I kill more coyotes with dogs during the summer than without? Probably. But if I would, but here's the thing. I have coyotes come in that would be easy to kill. You know, they're 180, 120 yards. Be easy to bark them and just shoot them. But I want my dogs to go to them. And if they run off, so be it. I'm there. I'm not about, you know, if I was a government trapper and dead coyotes were my job, you know, I might be, I'll think a little bit differently on that. But when those dogs go out, that coyote comes back, you know, you can tell when they're locked in, they're locked in. And one might turn into 2 or 3, or there just might be one. But the way I use them, since it's more of a recreational deal for me, I think if a guy was serious about, you know, like I said, if it was your job, you know, there's guys that, like Cal Taylor, for example, he, you know, he gets a call and he goes in, and not just Cal, but all these government guys, they have a pair of coyotes come in, they get on the dogs, they get them killed. Well, they've got dogs, they want their dogs to find the den. And they might set, you know, if they don't get, if there's a third coyote or whatever, they might sit for hours in glass and try to find out where that coyote goes, where that den is. And they might spend days. It's not their job to go make a stand, kill a double, and go down the road to the next stand. It's their job to kill every single coyote in that family group. And so my, with me being recreational, you know, I want to go up and hunt with one of those guys and see how they find those dens, how they, you know, just everything that's involved with what they do, because it's a whole different ball game when it's not recreational.
Right.
Scott, so, you keep on bringing up government trappers. What, Kevin, we don't have those here, do we?
Not that I'm aware of.
I mean, is that just in states like that where stuff like this is a big problem for people?
I know they have them in South Dakota. I know they have them in Wyoming. We have them here. The majority of what our guys do here is probably hog related.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if Texas has government guys or not, but they're employed by the USDA. So you could probably go to the USDA website and find out exactly what states have them.
Yeah.
I don't know if Kansas or Arkansas, I don't know if they have them, but I think a lot of the areas where there are sheep, like Wyoming and the Dakotas and all that, they're going to have them. And
Is that what they're typically called in for? Is, hey, this farmer or this rancher's calling with major losses, go get every one of them?
Yep. And Randy Rohde, this is another thing about when I talk about learning about coyotes and what makes them tick and all that. Randy, he patrolled 2.1 million acres. And he said they had areas where they used every form imaginable. Planes, snares, poison, dogs. Hunting is the least effective way of getting that, of eliminating numbers. It just, there's way better methods. But snares, foothold traps. I mean, Randy was like from December 1st till January 15th, he averaged like 325 coyotes combined and everything, trapping, shooting, all that. But he said they had areas where they would go in and try to eliminate every single coyote. And one thing I regret not asking him is an area 3 square miles? Is it 5 square miles? How big is an area? But where they would go in and do that, when they would kill a female, you can see like the fallopian tubes, you can see how many pups they had for several weeks after they have had their pups. Mm-hmm. So he said the areas where they tried to totally devastate them, that those females that have 9 to 11 pups. And he said the first year females would be bred also. And then like the dispersal, whenever they kick the pups out of the den, mid-September, early October, you'll typically there'll be a male and a female pup that stays with the family group. So, and there, here's where I'm not sure, but you have that male and female from last year that were kept. I don't know if they get pushed out, or I don't really know on that for sure how it works, but that first year female is not going to get bred under normal circumstances, but those first year females would be bred. And he said, if you go in mid-February, early March, whatever, and you kill a lactating female, that other female will lactate and raise those pups. But if they're 3 weeks old, they'll survive on grasshoppers and stuff. And the deal on the lactating pups, I've actually got a terrier pup out here whose mama, there was another dog that had a litter of pups and she got some type of virus and she died about a week later. And my dog's mama at the time started milking and raised a litter of bulldog pups.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So, you know, and I guess I've heard about you put 5 women in a house and their cycle will kind of. So, but then again, he told me on areas where they hit pretty hard that those coyotes, it has 7 to 9 pups. And then the areas where they went in and just took care of a problem coyote when they got a call, 5 to 7, 5 to 8 pups. So they will reproduce according to, number one, what the area will hold. If this area is going to, if it can sustain 11 coyotes, there will be 11 coyotes, 13, 8, whatever that number is. And that litter, those litter numbers will accommodate what they can handle. So that was interesting. But again, I wish I would have known, you know, when we're talking about an area, what's the average area we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So
that's pretty wild. Yeah. I know, you know, you talk about that stuff, and that's one of the things I know I got from you as well, is getting a couple of books on reading about that stuff, like Journals of a Coyotero. And there's another one, I think I have it up here on my shelf yet, either that or I loaned it to a buddy.
Ray Alcorn or somebody wrote a book, and I've got the books, and I went the other day, a guy was asking about them, and I pulled them up to try to find them. You can't find them. And the ones you can find, they're $400.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, just those books, I read them and tried to, you know, now if I wouldn't have had coyotes, probably, you know, I've read a lot of stuff about deer, but I never had deer to apply it to. So having the coyotes to apply that stuff to, it's beneficial, very beneficial.
Sure. Now, do you guys have other predators out there that you hunt?
We've got bobcats. I've actually got a bobcat here behind the house. It's pretty good size. Today I went down to hunt. It was my intention. I took my shotgun. I was going to get in the brush and I was going to try to kill a bobcat. That didn't last very long. I made two bobcats, and then it's like, no, I can't just sit here in these trees. And I guess the bobcats, the wind's not that big a deal with them. And I had a couple of setups where I wasn't worried about the wind, and it just killed me to think that I might be educating some coyotes. So I didn't get a bobcat killed today.
You guys have fox?
Bobcats? Oh, yeah. I got three red foxes in my backyard. The reds are most common around, like, I live half a mile from the Tulsa Stockyards. So there's always a dead pile there. There's a big trucking company catty corner to me, so they've got a cafeteria. So, like, schools and places that throw out a lot of food in town is where the red foxes are on this side of the state. You go about 4 hours west, you might get into some more reds out in western Oklahoma, but they're like ghosts out there, whereas these are stupid. I mean, I can literally walk out there right now and say, Foxy, Foxy, and throw out a handful of Bill Jack dog food. And in 5 minutes, a fox will be there. Oh, wow. So they're not pets, but they sure wouldn't be a challenge to hunt. And grays, there's an occasional gray, but not many.
Okay. Do you see with a bobcat and fox living back there, do you see any kind of territorial anything between those two species at all?
Josh, I'll send you some pictures from my trail camera. I have this lane that comes off of a food plot down into a little creek. I'll get a text. There'll be a rabbit. 5 minutes later, there'll be a fox. 5 minutes later, there'll be a rabbit. There might be a coyote. No, I don't.
Okay.
The cat, I get fewer pictures of the cat. The cat, I think, he kills my squirrels that are eating my deer feed because they're slow and they can't get away. So the cat, I think he primarily preys on the squirrels, but I don't see anything territorial with them at all. And I can't imagine, I don't know rabbits make it because they're right there in the same trail as everything that wants to eat them within a few minutes of them.
Yeah.
Hmm. So when you first started calling, what were you using for a caller? Were you using hand calls or e-calls?
A little bit. All stuff, and then I had a Fox Pro Spitfire. The remote didn't have an antenna. It's probably like the equivalent of the dead bone now.
Yeah.
Didn't have an antenna or anything. It held 24 sounds. I think I had 12 sounds on it. The range was terrible. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. I used that for the first 3 years I hunted. I was scared to get a different call because the remote, I didn't know if I could figure out the remote. How stupid I was there. But no, I killed, I think when I used to keep track, the first 3 years I killed, I averaged 78 coyotes a year with that $200 call.
So to answer the people's questions that message us about calls and volume, the Spitfire, anything with one single tiny little speaker that's the cheapest one a company makes will work just fine.
It'll work. It's not what I would prefer. Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of this stuff, guys, I'm 52 years old, and I remember what it was like not to have $500 to go spend on a call.
Yep.
I remember what it was like to have to save to buy that $200 call. So I try to make that real clear. I've become, now I'm buy once, cry once, no matter what it is. I'm fortunate enough that my wife and I both have good jobs, and I can buy the stuff that costs a little more. So I understand not being able to.
Yep.
And I try to make that real clear to guys. I'm like, you know, go ahead and save your money, spend a little bit more and get this. But if you can't, this will work. But if you can buy this, go ahead and save the money to buy this, because you'll be happier with it.
Yep.
So I've been on both sides of the fence with that. But now I buy the better stuff, and it's hard for me to make a comparison between a $500 plus e-call to compare it to a $250 one. Yes, I think I know they work. Absolutely. But I think some of the functions, you know, obviously you're not going to get the same remote functions and all that stuff, but, you know, you keep good fresh batteries in them, and, you know, you don't max them out on volume and make them crack and all that. Yeah. You can kill coyotes with the lesser expensive calls. Mm-hmm. And if I was a guy half a dozen times a year, I wouldn't have a need for a $500 call.
And you have a CS24 that you've been running like forever, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Still have that one, right?
Oh yeah. I like that TX500 remote.
Oh yeah. Me too.
It's got foam tape wrapped around it, and I've got, you know, I don't know if it makes a difference or not, but I think it does. But yeah, I got that, and I've got a Roughneck, and I like them both, but I don't call that loud, even when it's really windy. Like I think the Roughneck goes up to 32. I don't think I've ever had it past 28. The CS 36, 38, maybe, but I don't call normally with, you know, regular type winds. I don't call very loud. I don't call quiet. I mean, it's not like you have to struggle to hear it, but I've seen guys that turn it on and it's like, wow, it's it's real loud.
So what about in terms of your firearm choices from when you first started to now? I mean, I've seen you use, remember an Excel Arms 22 mag. I remember some nice looking bolt guns. Tell us a little bit about the firearms you've used over the years.
That 22 mag, we used those because they were a sponsor of Relentless Pursuit. So they sent us some of those, and we used them. We killed coyotes with them, but I'll say this, if you watch any of those episodes, we didn't shoot them just once. Like when it was like, you know, we put it on. You can kill coyotes with the 22 Magnum, you know. I myself don't want to, you know, I think 100 yards is realistic. I don't want to have to wait until if I have my choice, I'm not going to use a weapon that's marginal. Mm-hmm. I would rather have something else. Now, put me in a tight cover where I'm shooting 50 yards or closer, maybe bobcats or foxes. Heck yeah, 22 Magnum's pretty devastating. I've got a 300 blackout that I hunt hogs with. I enjoy it. I've killed some coyotes with it, but primarily use it for hogs. And as far as, I'm a 243 guy. And the reason I'm a 243 guy, when I was a kid and I hunted deer, I used the first rifle that I ever shot was a 30-30, and I hated the way it kicked. And then my dad bought me a 270, and I really didn't like the way it kicked either. I'm a puss when it comes to recoil. And then I don't know how I wound up with a 243, but I like that 243. And from then on, that's all I shot.
I have a question on that. 243 versus a bobcat. Is that a good thing or don't do it?
It depends on where you hit them. I mean, I shoot just an 80 grain lead point. I'm not concerned about fur or anything. But most of the coyotes that I shoot, you know, you can find the entry and there's not an exit. And then there's some jobs that I shoot, I might clip a shoulder and just annihilate the exit besides that big.
Yep.
So it all comes down, you know, like the VMAX. I've seen spots on coyotes get shot in the shoulder, have a wound on them this big on the entry where it splashed and no exit. And then you go an inch and a half back and hit them here and don't hit that shoulder and have a pinhole.
So you're saying it's probably going to be safest for me to leave the 243 at home to go kill a bobcat. So my choices are the 17 Super Magnum rimfire, a 223, a shotgun, or my 243.
If I was just going to target the cats, I'd get a 45 grain 223 and find a bullet that, you know, a lot of the varmint bullets, I think they fragment real easy, and I don't like that. I mean, for whatever reason, I don't like that. But, again, I want to kill them. I want to hit one in a toenail and kill it. But I think probably if you found you a 45 grain and 243 and did a, you know, were looked at, made a, the right bullet selection, you'd probably, that would probably be what I would do if I was going to go try to hunt bobcats.
Yeah, because we only get, I think we can get a total of what, three a year if we travel around the state, or is it just two,
Kevin? You're allowed two. You're one, allowed one down here and one in the Upper Peninsula.
And I've only ever seen one, and it was in the middle of the night, so we can't night hunt for bobcats. But our season starts January 1st and ends the 11th, I think.
Or down by where you're at, it does, and mine goes till the 20th.
So it would be my first one. So the first one I get, I don't really want to have to.
I tell you what I would do. I would have a shotgun across my lap and have my rifle on a set of sticks. I know two guys that are daytime bobcat killers, and one of them's named Scott Ruff. One of them's Kelly Jackson. Kelly likes to hunt, get about 65, 70 yards off of a tree line. And he scans a tree line real good. And he said those cats a lot of times will come to the edge and they'll sit down.
Yep.
And he tries to look and notice if there's anything different. He said when they sit down, they look like a bowling pin.
Mm-hmm.
And he kills a lot of cats like that. The other guy gets in stuff so thick, he practically has to crawl in it. So a rifle is not beneficial for him. So if you're going to be in the cover, I would definitely have both. But if you're going to try to hunt back, and, you know, pull one out in the open or shoot one on the tree line, I'd use that rifle.
Okay.
But today I had a shotgun, and my intention was being in the thick stuff, and it didn't last very long.
What shot size are you using for cats with a shotgun?
I just shoot 4 buck at everything.
Okay.
BBs do, but now they legalized 4 buck. You know, I never had any problems with copper-plated BBs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you mentioned it a minute ago, and I want to talk to you about it. You mentioned Relentless Pursuit. So how is it hunting with Tim Wells?
God, that guy's crazy.
Oh. No, you know, he's no different than anybody else. You know, if he puts his pants on one leg at a time, just like we do. He's willing to have unsuccessful days to get the type of footage that he wants. You know, whenever you have a TV show, if it's not on film, it's worthless, you know, it's pointless. And, but you know, he's fun to hunt with. And, you know, a lot of times when we get our footage and we've got enough for an episode, we'll clown around a little bit more, but for the most part, it's business. Get in there and try to get stuff filmed and then there's times, you know, that Tim's been coming through and we've hunted without a camera and just go out and hunt to have fun and, you know, no stress, no expectations, just hunt and have a good time. But some of the stuff that he pulls is, you know, people don't realize how many hours, how many days of, you know, unsuccessful days that if you didn't have a camera, a lot of them would have been fine. You got your animal killed and good to go. But because he's got to have it on film, you know, when we set up the GoPros out there and got the remote that triggers them all at one time, so he gets neat footage there. And but it's fun. You know, I enjoy it. I like it. You know, a lot of times he'll call me and he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, nothing. Why? You got to off. I'm like, well, what are we doing? We had one deal. There's a guy named Dennis Erkstein, something like that. He's a safari guy and he lives down in Del Rio, and he's got some exotic stuff down there, but we were going to go down there. He has the Mexican fighting bulls, and we were going to go down there and try to kill a fighting bull. And there's two videos that exist of Dennis's with these bulls, and one thing I can tell you about cattle is they've got, I don't know if you guys hunt around a lot of cattle, but you can walk into a place down here and have cows 800 yards away on the side of the hill. And if the wind's blowing towards them, instantly their heads go up. And these bulls, they have 10 of them in a 1200 acre pasture. And when they raise them, if you raise them together, they get along okay. But they'll still group up. There might be three over here, three here, and four in this group. And I told Tim, I said, we were spear hunting, by the way. I said, here's the problem. I said, okay, we've got this bull over here. We've got the wind in our face, and we're trying to get close enough to this bull to kill it with a spear. And I said, you don't know what's over here downwind. And I said, if they smell us, they're not just going to smell us. They're going to come to us. I said, one of us is going to get hurt. You just know that. One of us is going to get hurt. He goes, well, he said, are you up for it? I'm like, yeah, I'm up for it, but I'm just telling you. You know, if one of them gets you down, you ball up and you don't, you know, hopefully they'll back off of you. So I explained to him all the stuff, and we're getting ready to go. I mean, we're like 3 days from going, and he calls me. He goes, we're not going to go hunt. And I'm like, what? He goes, Dennis decided that it's just too risky. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of glad. Glad. Because, you know, and I think one of us, if both of us, would have gotten hurt. But he does some wild stuff.
He does.
I love watching him shoot them coyotes running by with his Oneida, just like, oh, shot another one, like, dang.
I've seen him make some shots laying on sideways, you know, and, you know, he misses. Don't think that he doesn't miss. Oh, he does. But I've seen him make some shots that were like, wow, unbelievable. And, but yeah, he's a cool dude. He's just, you know, he's no different than anybody else. He just has done a lot of stuff most of us haven't.
Right. Yeah.
That's the thing I noticed too. I mean, the last one that I remember watching his was his wolf hunt where he got the black wolf. And that was just, I like how he narrates things. I like how he films things. You know, it's a cool experience to, you know, hear the story from his perspective on stuff like that.
And that wolf, I mean, think about it. Think about how many people have not been able to kill a wolf with a high powered rifle.
Me.
Guys killed, that's his second or his third. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and just calls this sucker up within bow range. It's like, wow. And that's a perfect example of, I can't remember how many days he was up there and saw wolves and couldn't get them in camera, couldn't get them in frame. And but the patience required to do what he does is it's nerve wracking sometimes.
Right. So when you are going to go out coyote hunting in your area, do you have what you consider ideal conditions that you're like, yeah, I'm going to get out there?
Mm-mm.
Just anytime.
Mm-mm. I've killed coyotes at high noon when it was literally 110 degrees outside. And I mean, I've had days, and here's something that sits, tell me if you guys have experienced this. Let's say that we go hunt today. We take today's conditions and we go make 10 stands and we call coyotes on 7 of those stands. And then we take another, we could recreate today and go hunt those same 10 spots. Now they weren't hunted just before. We might call coyotes on 2 stands. So I've not found anything barometric pressure. I know that it has some effect on stuff, but I don't pay attention to it. I just, you know, I go to my places depending on which way the wind's blowing. Depend, you know, that has everything to do with where I hunt. But I've not found that 20 degree day is any better than a 50 or a 70 degree day. So,
is your preference a crosswind?
No, I like wind in my face.
Okay.
I don't mind a crosswind, but I like the wind in my face. And there are a lot of guys I know that are very successful that prefer a crosswind. Mm. You know, and there's times I set up, I've got a crosswind, or I might have a 45 degree. All I know is where I'm not looking for coyotes, because if they're in my scent cone behind me, I've got everything set up. I want to try to bring my coyote to a certain spot and get him killed before he gets downwind of me or my call. So, you know.
What type of terrain are you typically hunting?
A lot of it's pasture ground, meadows with some, you know, clumps of brush here and there. There'll be a tree line with the creek, then some cover. Most of it is, you know, rifle range. I mean, we kill a lot of coyotes. Our average shot's probably 50 yards without dogs. With dogs, it's closer. But most of it, now there are times when it's windier that I want to get closer to cover, and I might take a shotgun it also. But it's just, you know, some prairie ground with, you know, it's not like prairie as far as you can see, but just meadows where they run cattle, where they bale hay, you know, no mountains, you know, hilly in places. There's draws and ravines and stuff, but it's not rugged by any stretch.
You guys have sagebrush, or is it mainly just like grass?
Mm-mm. Grass.
Okay.
Grass, Bermuda grass, not any sage.
Okay.
What would you say is your favorite season to coyote hunt?
June.
Okay.
With the dog. Yeah, June.
Very cool.
When it's absolutely the most miserable outside that it can possibly.
Yeah, because you guys get pretty warm down there, I'm sure.
Humid, ticks, bugs, when all that stuff is, when everybody else wants to be fishing, that's when I have the best success.
You know, that's funny because we get that up here too. But the one thing I like up here is when ice fishing season's on. I like to get out and hunt during that time frame too. Up here, you see the coyotes use frozen waterways a lot, and I love getting out on stuff like that.
Well, I go to Tractor Supply and get the permethrin, like the 28% or whatever, and I'll mix an ounce of that in a gallon of water, and I spray it. I'll spray my boots down. I spray it down real good. The only thing, don't spray it on the back of your hand where you're wiping your sweat, or it will irritate your eyelids. But man, I might not have, if I have two ticks during the whole summer on me, it's unusual, you know, and I'll spray my dogs down. And, but I definitely, I'm out there with the ticks and the bugs and the spiders.
Yeah. I got the Sawyer's spray, and that's what I treat all my stuff with. And since I've used that, hardly ever have any ticks.
I'm going to send you a link. Buy this stuff and mix your own. Okay. I can make 50 gallons for what you pay for 32 ounces of Sawyer's, and my stuff's probably 10 to 12 times stouter.
I'll try it.
That Sawyer's it's like 0.01%. I'll save you a lot of money and have you a lot better product. Because I'm all about all that stuff, like with my worming of my dogs, my flea and tick control.
Treating yourself for COVID.
I buy stuff in bulk. Huh?
Treating yourself for COVID.
Heck yeah. You know.
Yeah. I remember that.
I was a kid. That Ivomix, no new deal for me. I was raised around cattle and stuff, and Ivomix, nothing new for me. So.
Right. You know, very cool.
And I didn't catch it until they made me take the shot at work.
Really?
Really. 3 days after.
That's why one reason I didn't get the jab, because I mean, every time I've had a flu vaccine, I got sick, and I sure as hell didn't want to take that one and end up with that or whatever side effects were out there.
They were, you know, it was basically coming down to you have a job or you don't. And then I gave in and took it. And then about 10 days later, they said you could have an exemption. And I was like, and they gave people $5,000 where I worked to take it. And, you know, I wouldn't have taken it if I'd have known I could have gotten that exemption. But
did you get the $5,000?
Damn right I did.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. You have any other questions for him, Josh?
I do. I have one at least follow-up question. Why does Steve Kreiner seem to kill more coyotes when he's with you?
You know, the truth about that is we filmed 4 episodes. One of them was at a Rut and Strut out in Elk City, Oklahoma. Great ground. And we just had, we hunted a couple of days out there, and it was one of those deals. We just had 2 awesome days. And then the next time, I think it was just a few weeks later, we went to CNS Whitetails there in El Dorado, Kansas, where he killed that buck the other day. And just excellent ground. And just right day, right time, and all that. It just worked out. Has nothing to do with me. It's just we were at the right place at the right time. And I will say that I've probably 24 coyotes total that I've seen Steve shoot at, and there's been one that he missed, and that's when he talked about the airball, and I thought I was on like punked or something. He missed him so bad. I thought it was, he's standing out there 75 yards looking right at us, and he shoots, and if that would have been an elephant, I don't think he would have hit it. I just looked, and I'm like, what? And he rechambers another one. The coyote's just standing there. Boom! Waxing. But I'll tell you, that guy can shoot. He can shoot, and he understands coyotes, and he's taught me quite a bit about just little things that he's learned from a lot of the older guys that he's been fortunate enough to be around. But no, I just give him a hard time on that. Just good ground and there at the right time.
Sounds like from listening to him, you're kind of like me with the sounds, a little bit impatient, get tired of hearing the same thing with no results. So it's like you said, in a 10-minute set, you might play 10 sounds.
Shoot. 10. That's what there was a kid. I say a kid, he's 28. I got a kid that's 29. So he's a kid to me. He's like, what's your favorite sound? I'm like, dude, I don't know. I said, I really don't know. I said, I run through them so fast. And, you know, I don't know for sure. You know, I mean, I might have a coyote coming in that I can't see 2 sounds ago. So who knows? I might be running a bunch off too. But I just roll through it. And whenever they got harder to call, I'd go for 10 minutes playing miscellaneous stuff, and then I'd just stop and I'd wait for 1 minute, and that take this 1 minute is an eternity, but I'd start like I just got there. I'd howl. I'd go like I hadn't even been there. And I read a deal, a coyote at a leisurely pace, like just mousing, covers a mile in 6 minutes. So if I wait a minute and there's a coyote that's coming, you know, so he's gotten that much closer, and I start fresh. Maybe he wasn't hearing me before. I don't know. But I would start all over and just basically make another stand in the exact same spot. And we started killing coyotes at 18 to 20 minute mark, whereas before, you know, 12, 15 minutes, we were out of there. But I was like, something's got to change. This isn't working. We got to figure something out. But yeah, I rolled through it. There's no, you know, there's people that think, oh, well, there's no snowshoers in Oklahoma. You're right. There's not. There's a lot of other sounds that I played that probably aren't in Oklahoma either. But, you know, a coyote can't think like that. They don't, as smart as they are, they can't process that.
when you go from a jackrabbit to a cottontail rabbit to a woodpecker to a netty nuthatch to a blue jay, they can't put that together. Whereas like we're, somebody's trying to trick us. It's like, oh, that's Josh talking. That's Kevin. Mm-hmm. Oh, never heard that guy. They can't put it together. They can't think like that. So I've look with it.
If mm-hmm. anybody were to come to you tomorrow, or for some reason tomorrow you all of a sudden didn't have decoy dogs, no dogs to take out there, would you continue hunting like you do, or would that take a lot of it out of the experience for you?
Man, I love hunting coyotes, period. I'd still hunt. I'm passionate about the dog deal. I'm not, you know, a few years ago, I mean, I hunted 5 days a week, pretty much year round, and I just drove myself into the ground. But I'd drive 75, 80 miles after work to make one stand with the dogs because, you know, I had what I call 80 percenters. 80% of the time I'm going to call a coyote there. And now I don't have as many 80 percenters, so I try not to burn them up like I used to. But I'd still hunt quite a bit. The dog deal, it's just, I just love it. I get so much satisfaction out of it. The miles and the hours and the stands, the blank stands, the screw ups and all that go into it. You know, like my buddy Jeff told me, everybody, you know, these videos, everybody sees the butter and honey. They don't see the other stuff. But no, I'd still hunt. I don't think I would hunt when it's hot. I'd probably hunt more in the fall, in the winter months, than I do now. But I'd still do it.
Kevin?
I'm good. Well, thank you very much, Scott. We appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, thank you. Anytime. I enjoy it.
Do you still have content on YouTube?
Yeah.
Well, if someone wanted to see that, what would they look for?
I don't even know, Kevin. Okay. I don't know. Are you still there? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it's Scott Hand. I don't know. It doesn't have any kind of fancy name on it. And there's all the way from stuff from videos my wife took of me on pain pills to decoy dogs to there's a wide variety.
Okay.
Of
things. Gotcha. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us. And stay tuned, everybody, and join us on the next week's episode of the Overdrive Outdoors podcast. Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.